Superior Court Judge Isaac Borenstein is taking an unusual step today. Well before the age of mandatory retirement, he's leaving the bench to practice law and advocacy. Borenstein has been a judge in Massachusetts since 1986 and is perhaps best known for his involvement in the Felsacre child abuse case. WBUR's David Boeri has this profile.
Work. All right. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having anything to do before the Honorable Isaac Borenstein, Justice of the Superior Court, at the B session.
Appointed for life, Isaac Borenstein is about to leave the bench at age 58.
Draw near, give your attendance, and you shall be heard.
After 22 years in black robes, he plans to practice law, representing detainees at Guantanamo, and run Barack Obama's outreach program to Cuban voters in Florida. Yes, he is a liberal in an era when being liberal on the court risks being branded as soft on crime. But no one less than retired Superior Court judge and former Marine Robert Barton, otherwise known as Black Bart, says Borenstein was semper fi to justice.
I think he was an outstanding Superior Court judge. He had intellect and he had courage, and more than that, he had a judicial temperament.
The highly regarded defense attorney, Robert Sheketoff, laughs dismissively at Borenstein's image.
People see him as an extreme liberal. He behaves appropriately in the courtroom. He talks to the prosecutor. He listens to the prosecutor. He's concerned about the victims. He doesn't shy away from what he's done. You know, he's willing to talk to them and explain to them why he's done what he's done. And it's just that there are so few of them that have the courage to say, I don't believe the cop. I don't believe him. That story's ludicrous.
Yet, if you Google Isaac Borenstein and judge, the very first entry you'll find over a long career that's recognized for hard work, scholarly rulings, and the moniker of gentleman judge is this: All rise for this year's America's Worst Judges. A story in Reader's Digest from 2000.
In that pile are judges who are found drunk in their chambers, judges who never show up for work, judges who assault sexually their secretaries.
Reader's Digest didn't like a couple of his sentences in a judicial order. Borenstein says he regrets none of those decisions.
I've always viewed the role of a judge as the one person in the courtroom who is not an advocate, who will stand up even in the face of a mob and say, I am not going to succumb to mob mentality. I won't.
Borenstein displays an equanimity that may trace to personal history. The grandson of Polish Jews who fled World War I, he and his family went to Cuba and were assimilated there, then fled Castro's communism days before the Bay of Pigs invasion. In Tennessee, he enjoyed the benefits of special treatment for being a Cuban refugee, and he endured the trials of discrimination for being a Jew. Borenstein says criticism of judges comes with the turf.
And some of it is fair criticism, and it's healthy criticism. We need to be subject to public scrutiny to make us better people and better judges.
He says he's leaving the bench because he needs to make more money than what's paid even our most experienced judges, and because he wants to return to his roots as a public advocate. He was once a public defender in Roxbury. Looking back on his career, he agrees he will be remembered most for the notorious case of Felsacre Daycare.
It reads almost like a novel because there's so much conflict, tension, contradiction involved here.
In the 1980s, amidst a nationwide scare involving allegations of sexual abuse by daycare workers, young children testified that three members of the Amaralt family of Malden, who owned Felsacre Daycare, inflicted sexual abuse of the most fantastical nature, involving cameras, clowns, magic rooms, and wands.
Children, many of them, claim they've been forever scarred emotionally and physically by sexually being abused at a daycare center.
Violet Amaralt and her daughter Cheryl were convicted. But 5 years later, the Superior Court judge at their trial had misgivings. He tried to lessen their sentence, but he was overruled by the Supreme Judicial Court.
And the case went to Superior Court Judge Robert Barton.
Harvey Silverglate was one of the lawyers for the Amaralt women. They filed a new defense motion based on the fact that at the trial that child witnesses had been seated so the defendants could not see them, and Judge Barton granted a new trial.
These two women didn't have the opportunity to face their accusers the way our Constitution says it should be.
Once again, the High Court struck down a Superior Court ruling. No new trial. Judge Barton was shocked.
You know, the message was out, we don't want to ever see this case again. Forget it. Put the two women back in prison.
Barton took himself off the case. Now came still another motion for a new trial. Again, Harvey Silverglade.
It then goes to Judge Borenstein, and nobody thought that Judge Borenstein would have the guts to do the right thing.
While the Supreme Judicial Court argued that the case needed finality, that the process had to come to an end, and the conviction should stick, Borenstein asked,
how could finality trump serious doubts about justice? That, to me, is inconceivable.
He granted the motion for a new trial and then heard a second motion for a new trial. He concluded that investigators had used improper techniques to question the children in a climate of panic, if not hysteria. Defense attorney Harvey Silverglade.
Judge Borenstein demonstrated in excruciating detail how these stories of abuse were knocked into these children's minds. And that went right to the heart of the question of guilt or innocence. It went right to the heart of the question, did a crime ever happen?
Borenstein's ruling for a new trial was thorough and scholarly, and it transformed public opinion about the case.
Why did you read it aloud in the courtroom?
Because it was important that it be heard. They were unjustly convicted. I believe it firmly to my bones.
He wrote and read this.
Police make mistakes. Prosecutors make mistakes. Investigators and others in child welfare also make mistakes. They are human too. But owning up to mistakes, even serious ones, is far from being a sign of weakness. It is evidence of courage and strength.
In 1999, the Supreme Judicial Court ruled that Borenstein himself had made a mistake. They overruled him, just as they had the other judges. Again, no new trial. Yet many in the legal system say that, in a way, Borenstein had prevailed. Neither Scott Harshbarger nor Tom Riley, who had been district attorneys in Middlesex during the case, would comment to WBUR this week about Judge Isaac Borenstein.
I did what I thought was the right thing to do.
That could be the signature of his career as a judge and his commitment to justice. For WBUR, I'm David Boeri.